This is Ocean Gazing. It's the podcast where we shake off the barnacles and the kelp and go for a deep dip in the big blue salty sea. I'm Ari Daniel Shapiro.
Arm.grab4, arm.2 flush.
That's Sherry Everlove, a mechatronic engineer at the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute, or MBARI.
Forearm seek retract.
And she's reading off the commands she uses to control a special robot in the ocean.
Elbow seek flush.
This is the second episode of a two-part visit to MBARI. We'll learn about this robot, anchovies, and how high school teachers are using MBARI data right in their classrooms. Stay tuned.
Forearm seek garage.
Hello.
Hi.
Ari.
How you doing? Nice.
I don't know what you want to...
Yeah, do you want to start? You can tell me your name and what you do.
So my name's Jim Birch. Technically, I run the Surf Center here within MBARI that deals with this instrument that we call the ESP, which stands for Environmental Sample Processor.
ESP, usually I think of extrasensory perception. I mean, is there like any...
I don't know. Do you know why ESP was selected? I don't know. The idea, I think, is that this lab sits in the environment and it samples where it sits. And that's really, really unusual. There is nothing else like this in the world right now.
So the ESP, it's about the size of a trash can?
It is.
And it's got all sorts of colorful little cables in there and boards. What does all that stuff do?
Yeah, well, what it really is it's a microbiology lab that has taken all the steps that a human would do when they would receive a sample of water and automated it. So it's a robot, in essence. What the ESP does is it filters seawater, and it looks for either different microorganisms in the seawater, or it looks for the products that these organisms might make and slough off into the ocean.
What sorts of life are you on the hunt for?
So the ESP can detect bacteria, different kinds of algae, very small larvae.
The ESP can be used to monitor water quality, and it can survey for red tides, that is, dangerous blooms of dinoflagellates that can be poisonous or deadly for humans and other sea life. These little robots are usually stationed in the waters off Monterey. They can plug into MARS, the ocean observatory that MBARI runs. MARS offers two benefits. One, a power cord that provides the ESPs with a constant supply of electricity. And two,
The really, really nice thing is it has high-speed internet. So we can plug this in out in MARS and sit at a computer terminal here at MBARI and talk to it as though it were in the lab down the hall.
So you could write these commands to it while it's out at sea.
Oh, absolutely. We have, yeah.
The internet cable also allows Birch and his team to receive data from the ESP in real time.
Sherry Everlove
was one of the engineers on the project and built the ESPs from scratch. Now she's commercializing the ESP at McLean Research Laboratories on Cape Cod. But when I interviewed her, she was still at MBARI.
I love to tinker. I build things all the time. One of my earliest memories is being like 2 years old and taking apart my grandfather's fishing reel and not quite knowing how to put it back together, but, you know, interested in how things work. So working on this system that involves so many different kinds of engineering is so much fun.
Each of the ESPs has a different name. So this, I see a label says Betty.
Yes. Each of our instruments that we've built so far have been named. The first one we call Neo.
Wait, is that a pop culture reference?
It is, to The Matrix. So.
Oh, right. Okay, yes. I know Morpheus.
Yes.
Who's
exactly.
Neo?
He is the one.
Neo...
Was that Keanu Reeves?
Was Keanu Reeves, yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's not exactly why it's called. NASA Earth Observatory, because NASA helped fund it. But
right.
but we have two good reasons
yeah.
why we did it.
Yeah.
Then came Bruce.
Was named after a colleague.
Very Mac.
Strong, like a Mac truck, you know. It's
And Mo.
Somebody wanted, like, the Three Stooges names, and we nixed the other two, but Mo got to stay because it could be the Monterey Ocean Observing Experiment.
You guys are really good with acronyms.
We specialize in acronyms here, so.
Why do you go to the trouble of naming them?
When we have a bunch of them out in the ocean at the same time, we want to look at the data that's coming back from it. We want to know where it's coming from. And so you got to call them something. And names are just they make it a lot more fun.
My visit to Ambari was full of conversations with people doing important work. Before stopping by the ESP group, I dropped by Francisco Chavez's office. He's a biological oceanographer with an incredible view of the Pacific Ocean from his office window. Chavez studies how and why the numbers of different species in the ocean fluctuate.
I'm a student of climate and how it impacts ocean ecosystems.
And he uses moorings to monitor the level of carbon dioxide, or CO2, in the waters off Monterey.
At the surface here, we see these very large changes in CO2 that are driven by this natural upwelling process.
Upwelling is a process where the ocean kind of like pushes up water from below. And this water is really rich with all this kind of organic stuff.
Inorganic.
It's been
decomposed. It's like Miracle-Gro. We have a whole bunch of Miracle-Gro, and we've also gassed it with CO2 gas like we have in soda pop. So we have CO2 and Miracle-Gro together that's brought up to the surface by this upwelling.
And it's that's kind of a good food source for a lot of critters at the surface.
Yes. And that drives these critters, makes the ecosystem productive.
So upwelling, it's not constant, but when it happens, kind of periodically, then you get these bursts in CO2 drawdown.
Yeah, so you have the upwelling will show up as a spike up in CO2. That'll last for 3 to 7 days. Plants are stimulated, they suck it down. So we see this continuous spikiness.
And that spikiness from CO2 getting upwelled and then drawn down by the phytoplankton, or tiny marine plants, that spikiness, it's overlaid on a trend over the last 50 years, a trend of increasing CO2 in the ocean due to human activities, deforestation, burning of fossil fuels, the usual culprits.
It's happening because something we've done. The big question now is, what are the impacts of that? And that's where we don't have the answers.
And on top of that, Chavez is taking into account El Niño and La Niña, natural changes in climate that happen every 3 to 8 years, and El Viejo and La Vieja that happen every 25 to 40 years. Chavez uses all this information to predict how certain fisheries, like sardines and anchovies, are being impacted and what's going to happen to them in the future. It's an important message, and one that Chavez shares beyond Ambari. I found that out when I asked him about a drawing of some corals lying on his desk.
This one?
Yeah.
I often go to schools and give invited talks. This was a little thing that I think it was a third grade class, did for me as a thank you when they all signed it. And I've kept it.
Increasingly, Chavez doesn't even have to show up in person for his science to be used in a classroom. For example, John Carey, a science teacher at Malibu High School in California, has his students work with Chavez's data showing the relationships between climate and the anchovy fishery. Carey says his students get a lot out of it.
They need to understand what's going on in the world. You can't make suppositions. You have to have data to create models that give us an idea of what might happen. So this gives them an idea that we have to gather real data to see what's happening into the future.
And how do you feel that this impacts their relationship with science, or does it?
I think that when students understand the importance of science and how we can show what is happening or what may happen or what has happened in the past, then they have a better understanding of their environment.
Carrie's just one example of teachers connecting to the science at Ambari, and that's a top priority for George Matsumoto. He's the senior education and research specialist here, and he runs a program for teachers called EARTH, which stands for Education and Research Testing Hypotheses. I'm telling you, the folks at Ambari, they sure know their way around an acronym.
So the general notion of the EARTH workshop is to get real data into the classrooms. A lot of this comes about because the teachers have gotten tired of textbooks, and some schools can't afford textbooks, period. But they've also found that the students are very eager to learn, but the students want to learn material that is current and relevant, and that comes down to real data. In particular, real-time data, something that is perfect for students because they get very excited about that. And the teachers are the ones who are going to have to motivate the students and interest the students in these issues. But it's going to be the students of today that are going to make the difference tomorrow.
Check out our website, oceangazing.org, to hear about another application of the ESP that involved a big flush, and to learn about a lesson plan using Chavez's data that came out of an Earth workshop. You can also send a note or a question to any of the scientists and educators featured in this episode. Just go to oceangazing.org. Ocean Gazing, it's a product of COSI, and we get financial support from the National Science Foundation.